When you think about modern cybersecurity, it is so easy to imagine building this massive, impenetrable fortress. I mean, we spend all of our time and resources putting these giant solid iron doors on the front.
Right. Military-grade encryption, complex passwords, biometric locks, all that stuff.
Exactly. And you stand there looking at that door feeling perfectly secure.
Well, yeah, because on a purely mathematical level, that door is virtually impossible to break down. The cryptography we use today would take supercomputers thousands of years to crack by brute force.
Right, but then you start reading the reports coming from the front lines, and you realize the attackers aren't even trying to batter down the iron door anymore. They're tunneling through the concrete foundation the fortress is built on.
Yeah, or they're hiding inside the supply trucks making daily deliveries.
Or, in some of the cases we're looking at today, they are literally poisoning the air circulating through the ventilation system. So, welcome to today's deep dive. We are thrilled to have you with us as we unpack a stack of late July 2026 cybersecurity reports.
And these sources, they don't just list sophisticated hacks. They really map out the hidden vulnerabilities in the, well, the invisible systems of trust that you and I rely on every single day.
Yeah, the three cases we have in front of us today are a wild ride. We're going to look at a $70 million crypto heist caused by a microscopic code error in physical hardware.
That one is fascinating.
Then we have a highly trusted advertising network that secretly started rewriting the copy-paste function on computers all around the world. And finally, we'll look at how advanced state actors are weaponizing something as mundane as the Wi-Fi at your everyday hotel.
Let's start with that iron door of your fortress analogy.
Yeah.
In the cryptocurrency world, the ultimate iron door is supposed to be the hardware wallet.
Because the whole pitch of a hardware wallet is that it stores your keys offline, right?
Yeah.
It's a physical device, usually looks like a little calculator or a USB stick.
Exactly.
It is completely disconnected from the internet, so theoretically, hackers just can't reach your keys.
But consider what happens if the lock on that impenetrable vault was manufactured incorrectly at the factory.
Oh, man.
Yeah. According to a late July report from Galaxy Research, an attacker drained 1,196 Bitcoin addresses in just 41 minutes. They walked away with over 1,082 Bitcoin, which at the time was worth about $70.2 million.
$70 million
Yeah.
in 41 minutes. And Galaxy tied this massive sweep to a specific firmware flaw in the Cold Card, right? Which is a very popular Bitcoin-only hardware wallet made by a Canadian firm called CoinKite.
Yeah, and the forensic work by the security firm Block is really something to behold here. They trace the $70 million disaster back to a March 2021 firmware integration error.
Okay, so this was sitting out there for years.
5 years. The device was supposed to use a dedicated hardware random number generator, a secure chip known as an STM32, to create the secret seed phrase for the wallet.
Right, because in cryptography, randomness is literally everything. If someone can guess the process you use to generate your secret key, it just ceases to be a secret.
True randomness, what cryptographers call entropy, is the bedrock of all digital security. A secure 12-word seed phrase relies on 128 bits of entropy.
Okay.
But because of this error, the seed generation was routed away from the secure hardware chip. It defaulted to a software-based fallback called MicroPython's Yasmerai.
Yasmerai. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a deterministic pseudorandom number generator.
The technical why behind this error is the kind of thing that just keeps software developers awake at night. I mean, Block found that in ColdCard's production configuration file, there was a macro, basically a label in the code named MicroPA HW-enable-RNG.
Right.
And because CoinKite supplies its own hardware wrapper, this macro was set to zero, essentially telling the system false or off.
And that would be completely fine, except the code library checking that setting didn't actually check to see if the value was one or a zero. It only checked to see if the macro existed at all.
Right. It's like checking to see if a house has a security system installed, but not bothering to check if anyone actually armed the thing.
Exactly. Because the macro existed, the system assumed everything was fine and bound the software build to the less secure fallback generator.
And the consequences for the entropy were just catastrophic. I mean, because the software fallback was initialized using highly predictable data like the chip's unique ID and basic timer registers, the effective entropy dropped from a secure 128 bits down to roughly 40 bits on older models.
And about 72 bits on newer ones, yeah.
Okay, wait, let me challenge that premise for a second. A hardware wallet, is essentially an air-gapped device, right? It's sitting in a drawer somewhere in your house.
Sure.
Even if the key it generated back in 2021 was predictable, how does an attacker steal $70 million remotely? I mean, they still don't have physical access to the device to punch in a PIN code or initiate a transfer.
Well, that is the insidious nature of blockchain technology. The attacker doesn't need to communicate with your physical device at all. Your public address, which holds the funds, is visible on the public blockchain.
Right, everyone can see the vault.
Exactly. So if the attacker knows the boundaries of that predictable pattern, like if they can constrain the device's unique ID and the timer state used during that flawed fallback process, they can use massive computing power offline to generate millions of candidate seeds.
Ah, I see. So they generate the weak keys on their own computers and then just check them against the public ledger to see if any of them unlock a wallet with money in it.
Yes. When they found a match, they possessed the private key.
Yeah.
They didn't breach the physical wallet in your drawer. They essentially recreated your key out of thin air because the math wasn't truly random.
That is terrifying. And when they executed the heist, they were incredibly precise about it. The report notes they used a very specific 30 satoshis per virtual byte fee rate with a no change signature.
Yeah.
For those who might not live and breathe crypto, the fee rate is just what you pay the network to process the transaction. But a no change signature, that's really interesting.
It's a crucial detail. In Bitcoin, if you have a 10 coin bill and you send 2 coins, the network sends you 8 coins back as change to a new address. A no-change signature means the attacker swept the entire contents of the wallet cleanly in one go without leaving any change behind.
It makes the transaction look like a seamless, automated wallet migration rather than a frantic smash-and-grab theft. It's incredibly stealthy.
Very much so.
So how do users actually fix this? I know CoinKite pushed an emergency firmware patch on July 31st, but updating your firmware doesn't fix a key that was already generated using flawed math, right?
It doesn't. That weak key still exists out in the world. CoinKite advises users to generate an entirely new seed on the patched firmware.
Okay.
In fact, if you want to be completely certain, they suggest building a seed using at least 50 independent private dice rolls to guarantee true randomness.
Oh, wow. Going completely analog to fix a digital problem.
Yeah. And we saw a similar weak randomness flaw earlier in July, the Illbloom vulnerability that cost users over $5 million across other chains. So this is a recurring theme.
But what if the math isn't broken? What if the vault is perfectly secure, the key is truly random, but the attacker intercepts you while you are just walking to the bank?
Right.
That brings us to our second source, and it's a fascinating shift in strategy.
The attackers realize they don't need to crack your encryption if they can simply change the destination address of your money while you're holding it.
We're looking at a late July supply chain attack involving AdForm, which is a major advertising technology company. And the attackers didn't hack a specific user's computer, and they didn't hack the cryptocurrency websites those users were visiting.
No, they went after the middleman.
Yeah, they compromised a single JavaScript file, trackpointasync.js, on AdForm's network.
And this illustrates perfectly why supply chain attacks are so devastating. Thousands of legitimate websites trust AdForm to serve ads and tracking analytics. Those websites automatically load this script for every visitor.
Right.
So by compromising this one shared resource, the attackers gained a backdoor into thousands of downstream sites simultaneously without breaching a single one of them individually.
Think about being the user in this scenario. You've done everything right. You're on a secure, legitimate crypto exchange. But this poison script is running quietly in the background of your browser.
Yeah, it's totally invisible to you.
And the attackers added what are called XR obfuscated blocks of code to the JavaScript.
We should probably unpack that term, XOR obfuscation.
Yeah, go for it.
Basically, the attackers don't want security scanners to read their code and immediately flag it as malicious. So they use a mathematical logic gate, XOR, to scramble the text. To an antivirus program, it just looks like random gibberish.
But when your web browser loads the page, it has the key to unscramble it right before it executes.
Exactly.
And what this unscrambled code did was sit there and watch your computer's copy-paste clipboard. Every 4 seconds, it checked your clipboard. If it saw that you had copied a Bitcoin, Ethereum, or Tron address, it silently swapped it out for the attacker's wallet address.
It exploits a very human habit. I mean, crypto wallet addresses are long, complex strings of random characters. Most people only verify the first few and the last few characters, if they verify them at all.
It's like walking into a bank, handing the teller a deposit slip for your account, but the pen you use to write it magically rewrote the account number to the thief's account before the ink even dried.
That's a great way to put it.
And this script was incredibly aggressive about it. The captured sample didn't just target the clipboard, it actually hooked into the document's text nodes.
Meaning it actively rewrote values that were entered directly into input forms and text areas on the web page. It hooked the value setter itself.
Yeah, the independent security researcher Kevin Beaumont had a great write-up on this. He pointed out that even if you notice the address is wrong in the text box and you delete it and try to recopy your real wallet address, the script just keeps replacing it.
Wow.
It relentlessly fights you for control of that text field. And all the while, it was pinging an attacker IP address with the URL of the page you were on, actively tracking where this was happening.
Now, AdForm detected the incident quickly. They removed the malicious code, notified clients, and brought in the authorities. But for you, the listener, there is an immediate practical takeaway here.
What's that?
AdForm is advising users to clear their browser cache.
And the reason for that is how web browsers handle speed, right? To load pages faster, your browser saves copies of files locally on your hard drive.
Right. So even though AdForm fixed the file on their servers, the altered malicious file could still be sitting in your local cache, just waiting for you to make a transaction.
So clear your cache and seriously check every single character of a transaction address. Don't just check the first three and last three.
It raises a profound issue about the modern web, honestly. We are implicitly trusting the security of every ad network, analytics tracker, and social media widget embedded on the pages we visit.
Yeah, we are trusting third-party scripts we've never even heard of.
Which moves us from trusting our physical hardware to trusting third-party code to what is arguably the most fundamental, unquestioned trust of all.
The physical network connecting us to the internet. We are talking about hotel Wi-Fi.
In infrastructure itself.
According to Microsoft's latest threat report, there is a massive operation being tracked as Captive Crunch, and it's being run by a threat actor called Storm2945.
To give some context on who that is, the US and UK governments have attributed this group, Storm2945, as an operational subcluster of Midnight Blizzard.
Also known as APT29 or Cozy Bear.
Right. And ultimately, these governments attribute this activity to Russia's Foreign Intelligence Service, the SVR.
Just to be completely clear for you listening, we're simply looking at the technical footprints detailed in the Microsoft and government reports here. We aren't taking political sides, we're just tracking the data.
Absolutely.
And the data points to highly sophisticated, well-funded state actors targeting the captive portals on hotel Wi-Fi networks across multiple countries.
And a captive portal, for those who might not know the term, is that login page that intercepts you when you connect to a public network. The one asking for your room number or an email address before you can reach the wider internet.
Right. Think about the last time you sat on a hotel bed after a long flight. You're exhausted, you just want to check your email or stream a show, You connect to the Wi-Fi, and your laptop automatically pings a server to check if it has internet connectivity.
It's an automatic process, yeah.
But what the attackers did here was gain administrative control of the hotel's local gateway router.
And because that gateway also acted as the DNS resolver, the attackers had complete control over how traffic was routed.
Right, because DNS is basically the internet's phone book. When you type in a website name, a DNS server tells your browser what numeric IP address to actually connect to.
Yep.
Because the attackers controlled that local phone book, they could just forge the answers.
It is a classic ambush tactic. They intercept that automatic connectivity check and redirect it.
So instead of connecting to the internet, your browser is forced to the page pushing a fake browser update or an operating system update.
Yeah. And I was reading the ReliaQuest investigation of this, and what really stands out is that the compromised gateway doesn't silently infect the laptop. It relies on what they call click fix instructions.
Meaning it actually displays a pop-up telling the victim to open a Windows utility or terminal and run a command provided by the attacker.
Yes. They are just weaponizing our ingrained, impatient habit of blindly clicking updates so we can finally get online.
State actors are blending highly advanced network manipulation like compromising physical hotel infrastructure and hijacking DNS routing with incredibly basic social engineering.
Because they realize they don't need to burn a multi-million dollar, zero-day software exploit if they can simply trick an exhausted traveler into opening the door for them.
And the payload they deliver is just devastating. It's a remote access Trojan, or RAT, called Cornflake.
Which is a great name, honestly.
It really is. It disguises itself as a cloud sync service running in the background, but it's actually capturing your webcam images, recording your microphone audio, logging your keystrokes, and even taking screenshots whenever your computer is idle.
It goes deeper than that, too. It even steals cookies protected by Chrome's app-bound encryption.
Oh, wow. And the researchers also identified a secondary payload, right?
Yeah, called ChocoShell. This is an in-memory PowerShell stealer. It specifically hunts for .tbreez files in the token broker cache.
Okay, for those not deep in Windows architecture, those files hold the authentication tokens for Microsoft 365, Azure Active Directory, and Web Account Manager. Think of it like a VIP wristband to a club.
Precisely. By stealing the token, the attackers can perform session replay attacks. They don't need to steal your password.
They don't even need to trick you with two-factor authentication, do they?
No, they just steal the active VIP wristband, clone your login session, and walk right into your corporate environment.
That is wild. So how do you actually defend against a local network that is actively lying to your computer?
Well, Reliant Quest's primary recommendation is using an always-on, full-tunnel, virtual private network, or VPN.
Okay, how does a full-tunnel VPN fix the phone book problem?
A full-tunnel VPN takes your DNS queries, your request to the internet's phone book, and encrypts them on your device before they ever reach the hotel's router. So it sends those encrypted questions straight through the compromised venue gateway to your trusted corporate resolvers.
So the hotel's compromised router just sees encrypted traffic passing through. It can't intercept a request, it can't read, and obviously it can't forge an answer to a question it didn't understand in the first place.
Exactly. It creates a secure tunnel straight through the hostile environment.
Okay, let's bring all this together, because we've covered a lot of ground today. We went from a...
Yeah. We trust the factory to properly test the hardware's random number generator. We trust the secure website to vet every single line of its third-party code. And we trust the local network to route our traffic honestly.
Going back to our fortress analogy from the beginning, you know, we spend billions of dollars building these massive iron doors of encryption. And the math behind that encryption is sound.
It is.
But the attackers aren't breaking the math. They are attacking the implementation, the supply chain, and ultimately our own human impatience.
Which really leaves us with a critical question to consider about where this is all heading. We know that humans and complex third-party networks are currently our weakest links.
Right.
But as we move toward delegating more of our digital lives to AI agents, you know, systems designed to automatically patch our software, negotiate our connections, or even execute our crypto transactions on our behalf, what happens to that chain of trust?
Oh, that's an interesting point.
Will those AI agents inherit our blind trust in factory settings and compromised networks, falling for the exact same traps? Or will they finally be the ones with the patience and precision to actually double-check the math?
That is a deeply fascinating angle to think about as we inevitably hand over the keys to automation. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Stay vigilant, double-check those addresses character by character, and maybe think twice before blindly clicking update on that hotel Wi-Fi. We'll catch you on the next one.